This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. I'm your Abe Lincoln of love. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your President's Day. Why not? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Matt Patrick here today. Hello, Patrick. How are we today?
Good. And you can't tell a lie, so you really are the Abe Lincoln of love.
I am the Abe Lincoln of love, yes. Well, I think James K. Polk was a little too bizarre of a reference, but no, we'll go with Love Lincoln. Why not? I am not going to do that. You know what joke is. No. Bad listener. Not going to do. No. Link. No. Not. What the heck? Where's the snow, man? I mean, we were supposed to be buried under Greenland at this point. Where? Okay, I'll give Sved Sundgaard credit, because if you're not following his weather, so I still post his weather forecast up on the social media, and you should watch them. They're pretty solid. He was the only one that was saying, well, I shouldn't say that. He was very straightforward. I'll say it like that. He was very straightforward in saying that this could shift, that this is such a narrow band of snow, this first day, this Monday, it could shift, and that's indeed exactly what did happen. It shifted northbound. What's been amazing is this snow was supposed to start, Patrick, overnight. Then I got up and they're saying snow at 10, then noon, then 2, then 3. Now it's snow possible after 8 p.m. Possible. Now, tomorrow we're going to get snow. I mean, that's a given. That's just going to be a huge mass of snow that's coming through the entire upper Midwest. We're going to get some. But I think we're now definitively down from the 11 to 12 inches they were expecting for the metro area, down to 5 or so. That seems like the number that a lot of people are, you know, watch Sven's weather forecast, somewhere in that 4 to 6 range. So that would be 5. I'm no math whiz, but so somewhere in the 5 range is where we're going to probably end up tomorrow, but tomorrow evening into Wednesday morning. So, well, I tell you what, I wasn't necessarily looking forward to a massive amount of snow to have to deal with, so I'm okay with it. You think you can make it home okay by yourself?
I might need help. I might need you to create the tire tracks in front of me.
we'll get the plane with the skis on it landed out on Valley View Road. We'll evacuate out of here that way. All right. Or like every other producer, you're sleeping on the couch upstairs. It's one of the two. It's just one of the two. Just. I hope you can sleep on a couch. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Guess what? We've got another full week of AM 950 Wordle. That's right. Yes. Once again, we're hacks. We just grabbed onto the Wordle word, added AM 950, made up our own game, and ta-da! That's how it works. All right? Here's the deal. I am going to give you 3 letters. Those 3 letters have to appear in a word in order. For example, this is not the 3 letters, but this is just the example. If I was to give you the letters C-A-T, you could give me the word cat.
Meow.
But you could not give me the word act, because that's not in order. C. Simple. So, here's the deal. We're going to give you 3 letters. It can be a proper place name, can be a regular word. Get your word in by 2 different methods. 1, Patrick is eagerly standing on by to take your phone calls at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Also, we do the live streams of the radio station. It's Radio for Your Eyes over on Facebook, AM 950 on Facebook, Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. You can watch the show. I wouldn't advise you doing it while you drive, but as a matter of fact, don't do that. I'll get to that in a second. Be careful with that. But, you know, obviously if you're at home by your computer, there you go. Watch away. Hey, I don't judge. You want to have those nachos while you eat? Yeah, perfectly fine. You want to sleep? Knock yourself. I don't care what you do, but you can watch the show. And if you get so inclined, you can add the AM 950 Wordle word into the talk. It's that simple. So call Patrick, 952-946-6205. Make a comment on either of the two Facebook live streams over on AM 950 Radio and Progressive's next Matt McNeil Show. All right. If you are, we all the correct answers get put into a little bin. We pick one out, and that person randomly will win themselves an AM 950 calendar. Ooh, ah, smells like almost March to me. So, which, let's be honest with you, March is the worst month in this city because everything is wet and dead. But the picture is beautiful downtown Minneapolis for March. So there you go. Get ready for that. You can get yourself a calendar. Now, if you want to get the calendar and you just want to avoid all the Wordle stuff, easy peasy. Go to AM 950 Radio. Go to the membership page. Make a one-time or recurring donation. They have all the details there on how you do that. And as a thank you, we will send you one of the calendars. See? That simple. Today, though, the Wordle letters. Are we ready? We're ready. All right. W as in water. R as in Romeo. H as in hotel. All right? W, R, H. Those are your three letters. They have to be in order in the word or place name. And once again, good luck. All the entries received by 6 o'clock, you'll be entered in to win yourself the AM 950 calendar. All right? Good luck on that. W, R, H. There is a breaking story we want to make sure I mention. There is a very serious accident out on 169 right now. I believe they are still working on this as we speak, as the, 169, this is very tough. What had happened is it sounds like a vehicle rolled. Well, I don't need to tell you it sounds like. I actually drove past this. My daughter and I went over to Como Zoo this morning and saw a few of the animals. Pretty seals. And then, of course, went and saw the flowers over in the conservatory. I'll get some photos online a little bit later. Decided to go over and visit our good friend Terry John Zeeler, our food expert. He opened up his brand new cafe, Hepcat Cafe, over off of Wabasha on 5th in St. Paul. We went over there and grabbed some coffee, some of those fantastic Danishes. Got in the car, drove back. 94 through the midway, through Minneapolis, 394 out to the west, take 169 south. And as soon as I got onto 169 south, just south of 394, I noticed it was starting to bunch up as far as traffic goes. And I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. There's a big hill there. If you've ever driven the west side on 169, you know what I'm talking about. There's a big hill there. On the top of the hill, there was an accident. And that vehicle rolled a few times. It got up in the snow. There was snow all over the road, so that's how clear it got up into the snowbank, and it rolled. And my daughter, who was in the car, said, "I hope no one was injured." It didn't look like anyone was injured. Unfortunately, that's not the case. It sounds like someone indeed did pass away in that car accident. We got there before State Patrol or any law enforcement vehicle. I mean, it happened. It must have happened seconds before we got there, maybe 30 seconds before we got there. And yeah, very tragic, very sad. I don't know if they're still working on 169, but that's obviously, anytime there's like that, they close the highway down. I think they're basically routing everyone on to 394. So until they get that open, if it's not already open, anticipate heavier traffic on 394 as well as 494 and Highway 100. That's generally how that works. All right. Be careful. Craig Stevens, a great traffic reporter that was here in town back. He and I used to work together over at Metro Traffic, and we used to talk about how sometimes it's bizarre that accidents even happen. Because if you think about what has to happen in a certain day to get two people at the same point to have an accident, it really is pretty astronomical. It's, you know, think about going to work and, oh my gosh, I forgot my keys. So the 20 seconds you take to run back in the house to get your keys to come back on out, that factors in. If you hadn't forgotten them, you wouldn't have been in that place at the same time. Or you decide, oh, I'm going to swing off the highway here and go get some breakfast. Okay, fine. So you go get some breakfast. If you hadn't done that, you would have been long past that scene before that other vehicle was there. It's the things that have to happen to get you into a position where that happens is truly remarkable. It really is kind of one of those things where when you think about it, it really is amazing how something like this does happen. But it does. And all our best to the family members there. If I can also make sure I mention, as all these Republicans are out there screaming about and I'm going to get into this first hour a lot about what the Republicans are going to do in this campaign cycle. This is there's a two-pronged attack that they're putting forward. The first one is black guy, black Minneapolis guy, crime, black guy, crime, Minneapolis, black guy. That's what they're doing. And there's a lot of Republicans out there saying, yeah, talk about that. That's the most important issue. Dude, have you seen how many accidents are going on where there are fatalities and injuries on the highways? It is insane right now. It is insane. An unbelted passenger died in a crash in the Southwest Twin Cities Metro Highway on Sunday. We just had the one I went past today that there was an accident there. They had the person driving the wrong way on 394. That person was driving on the wrong side of the road from 6 in Minneapolis all the way out to Ridgedale where he hit the person. Between speeding, reckless driving, and drunken driving, it is amazing. There is an epidemic, a far larger crisis in this state than crime in Minneapolis. It is. There's a far larger issue. And the Republicans are not doing a damn thing about that. And you know why? Because it's not black guy, Minneapolis, black guy, cops, Minneapolis, black guy, crime, Minneapolis, black guy. That's what the Republicans want to talk about. Because they're trying to rile up their base. Meanwhile, a far larger problem with far more reaching consequences is unfolding every single day on the highways and byways of Minnesota. It's bad enough we've got snowfall in the state, and that's going to cause some problems. It sounds like there's a pileup on 94 out by Fargo right now. But you have got an epidemic of speeding, reckless driving, and drunken driving going on right now in this state. It's killing somewhere, what was the number, 500 people? Near 500 people last year. And right now, it doesn't seem to be slowing down. As a matter of fact, it seems to be getting worse. And I'm wondering if, as Omicron variant, that kind of dies down, we're getting less and less of those cases going on in the country and in the state, that more people are starting to get back on the roads and we're starting to get more accidents. Stop allowing this. Because I can tell you, Republican voter out in rural Minnesota, you're not going to be affected. I mean, sure, it's red meat for you if you're a racist, and that's what the Republicans are. That's the dog whistle. Let's just be honest. You can sit there and be enamored with black guy Minneapolis, black guy gun, black guy murder, black guy crime, black guy Minneapolis, black guy. That's Republicans. You can be enamored with that and think that that's a great reason to vote. But the reality is in your neighborhood, in your county, in your city, in your town, in your township, on the major roads out there and on the secondary roads, there is an epidemic of drunken driving, speeding, and reckless driving, and it's killing people all across the state at a far bigger hilt than anything going on in Minneapolis or St. Paul. So when your Republican goes out there and says, black guy, Minneapolis, black guy, because that's what they're trying to say, when they do that, you look at them and say, what are you doing to stop the reckless, drunken driving and the speeding going on all the roadways in the state? I believe in cops are doing a great job. Cops are doing a great job. But Minneapolis, no, and just keep hammering on that. And then, by the way, when they get tired of that one, ask them what they're doing to fight the meth epidemic in rural Minnesota, because that still's going on too. That's going on too. And as much as they want to just scream about North Minneapolis and crime and black eyes, which is what they're in, reminder, the entire Republican 4 years ago, the entire campaign against the Attorney General Keith Ellison was black Muslim man. That was their entire narrative. You go out into rural Minnesota, that's all you heard. Black Muslim man, that was Keith Ellison. That was their entire narrative. Don't fool yourself. They don't want to talk about anything else. They don't want to talk about the reckless driving, the drunken driving, the speeding going on. They do not want to talk about the meth epidemic in rural Minnesota. They only want to talk about crime in regards to black Minneapolis man. That's it. And that is it. It is disgusting. Tell you what, 952-946-6205. Let me get to the other fork of the Republican campaign mode this weekend because it was interesting. I actually got to talk to two students from Minnetonka High School about what the heck is going on out there. And I am so it doesn't escape me the fact that last week tonight with John Oliver also touched on critical race theory, and it's an interesting argument because there was a student that brought up something when I was talking to them that I thought was a very intuitive thought point on that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. No, we need to be, I mean, this is getting nuts on the roadways. And I think it is. I think it is more people getting back on the roads now that Omicron's starting to fade, and especially people going to work and stuff. Because that, I think there are just so many people that are out there that have been used to pretty much empty roadways and 70 miles, 75 miles an hour, that they're not paying attention to anything else out there. So, yeah, it's, you know, be careful out there. And once again, this is an actual legitimate huge issue that the Republicans don't want to talk about because their narrative is black Minneapolis guy, black guy, Minneapolis. That's their entire narrative. That's all they want to say, this entire thing, because that makes, you know, frankly, what it is it riles up the people that think white people should rule over black people. And that's kind of what they're trying to do. They're trying to, hey, I'm the candidate that will encourage that kind of behavior. Your grandma died when her car rolled over because a reckless driver was driving on the wrong side of the road, drunk in the middle of the night? Well, I don't care about that. I'm not going to stop that. That doesn't help me with my constituents. Yeah. It's and that's who these Republicans are. So it does bring up, though, the point. The second throng. So, I mean, the first one is, you know, they're going to try to scare white people about you've got to elect us so we can go in there and get those black people in Minneapolis under control. That's their narrative that they're pushing. That's the Republicans on one. The Republicans on the other side, there's this critical race theory thing. And it's not a surprise that, you know, this issue came up quite unexpectedly when I was talking to two students at Minnetonka High School. Not going to say their names because it seems like Minnetonka High School's got an issue. Holy cow, to say the least. But I live in the West Metro and I know kids who are going to Minnetonka. So I asked them, what the heck happened out there? And they had no problem in telling me. It sounds like kind of the narrative that you've been hearing, that there was a student that said the N-word, and that student, it sounds like, you know, through the accounts of these other students, was indeed the daughter of the basketball coach, and that the school not only forced these girls to, you know, to try to sign a non-disclosure agreements without parents present, which, once again, lawsuit, you're going to lose. Oh, you'll lose that one badly. You will lose that one badly. You just grab your checkbook now and start putting zeros on that page because you're going to lose that one badly. Oh, I would sue the living daylights out of you if you tried to do that to my kid. Holy God. But then they basically tried to sweep it on the rug. The basketball coach basically said no one can talk about it, which led to a lot of the players on the team who are African-American feeling very uncomfortable about that. And then it basically came down to, I guess the school was trying to get these kids to hand their phones over and open them up so they could go delete social media posts they didn't like. It was kind of ugly. But then there was last week, there was supposed to be this march against racism at the school. And at the last second, the school basically locked the school down and prevented people from going out of their classrooms to participate in this, you know, this march. Now, some kids did. But, you know, as one kid said, I even wanted to go to the bathroom. They wouldn't even let me go out of the room to go to the bathroom because they're very strict that no student was going to be allowed to leave the classroom. So as both these students I talked to about this said, they said, you know, it's really interesting to see the school district basically fight to stop people from protesting against racism, which is how both these kids took it. individually, not talking to them together, talked to them individually, they both said, boy, Minnetonka High School seems really determined to prevent people from speaking out against racism. That's their words, not mine. They all say they knew what would happen. They both were very critical of school trying to cover it up. And they both said the school really screwed up when they prevented the kids to protest. They should have just let them do that. As one person said, and this I thought was very interesting, the guy who runs the school board is a far-right idiot. That's, oh, these kids and their independent thought processes, huh? Well, I think it's the same guy. Is it the same guy that tried to defend disgracing a military war memorial as they had the bell and the wheel over at Minnetonka High School that someone illegally stole from the war memorial over on Padamakoska? Is it that guy? Or the guy that was talking about, we don't need any coronavirus protocols, our ventilation system is just great. Paraphrasing. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm not. Check. And by the way, it's funny. All you guys on the right think, well, we're control. We're going to make sure we control what the kids know and think. Guess what? The kids are crap, and they're already seeing through it. So you can try really hard to order them to not think, but that's not how this works anymore. The other kid I talked to, the one kid said that the guy running the school board was a far-right idiot. The other kid I talked to, he speculated. He said, I think this actually has to do with critical race theory. What he said is that actually there's been a lot of kids at that school, white kids, who come from conservative households, who are openly saying the N-word at Minnetonka. And the theory this kid had was that the fight against this critical race theory, which if you've not watched the John Oliver Last Week Tonight takedown of the complete made-up issue, which it is, It's basically the feeling is that racists are acting like they've won and now there's no longer any content for this. That basically, and John Oliver does a very good job of breaking this down over 20 minutes. And to paraphrase it, is that this right element of the right doesn't want to teach anything past the Civil Rights Act. And they act as if, well, the Civil Rights Act was passed, Martin Luther King, Barack Obama, see no racism. And that's the argument they're trying to make, even though the argument in critical race theory, which is a college-level degree course in a doctorate program, if I'm not mistaken, is that even with the Civil Rights Act, that racism is built within the societal structure of this country, and unless we see it, we can't undo it. And that is exactly what they push and they're pushing back and they're screaming like, how dare you teach my kids stuff I don't want to. Now, once again, I'm going to repeat something I said a bunch of times last week. And that is, well, if you don't want your kid to get in public school, you can homeschool your kid every day. You can homeschool your kid all the time. And there's not going to be any consequences for that because that you can basically, if there are things you disagree with, you can set that agenda. But these people think that basically they can scream down and prevent people from, they want the whitewashed 1950s version of history to be taught, that Native Americans basically loved the white Europeans and gave them all the land and there was no conflict whatsoever. And if there was, the Native Americans deserved it. And that African Americans really loved slavery, that slavery wasn't nearly as bad as it all was about, you know, chains and whipping and killing the slaves. Having a scene Gone with the Wind, they were much happier under that system than they were afterwards, for goodness sakes, it's clear. That's kind of what they want. And it goes to all races, that the Asian Americans and Latino Americans, Hispanic Americans, Mexican Americans. It goes to all, that they basically don't want you to acknowledge the fact that there is a difference here and there is a problem within our society. And this goes under the grand umbrella of what the reason why the Republicans argue there is no need for social safety net programs, there's no need for any kind of aid to poor communities, is because they insist there is no difference between the upbringing of a wealthy white kid in Wayzata and a poor black kid in Minneapolis, that those two kids are born and they have the same exact opportunities. So henceforth, if the black kid doesn't get a job on his dad's company's board when they're 24 years old, it's because the black kid just didn't try hard enough. And that is the mentality that these people have. And this is what they are pushing forward. And it is really, truly disgusting. But this is the fake narrative they want to believe. And so they're trying everything in their power to prevent people from actually learning the real history of what happened. Not because it makes white people feel bad, it's because it blows apart their narrative of there is no racism when there's tons of racism all around, for goodness sakes. Absolutely. No, the idea here is that they feel as if they have screamed this down, that they have won, and that they can go back now and start saying the N-word anytime they want, blank. And then all of a sudden something like this happens, and they're, oh, well, we got to go. We can't, how can you criticize those poor kids? No, we can't do it. We can sweep it under the rug. I got more on this when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, on your weather forecast, now they're saying it's not even going to snow till after 9 tonight. So your evening should be pretty much clear. So just be careful out there driving. Obviously, be careful. But sounds like mostly tomorrow will be a pretty big snow day. Just keep that in mind. Gordon, nicely done on your list of words here that fall into the AM 950 Wordle list of acceptable words for today. Worcestershire is probably my favorite. That's nicely done. I didn't think about Worcestershire. W-R-H. Water Romeo Hotel. That's okay. If you have to have a word that has W, R, and H in that order, and you'll be entered in to possibly win yourself an AM 950 calendar by the end of the show. You can get your AM 950 Wordle words in. Once again, they can be proper place names as well by calling Patrick at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, or making a comment on the AM 950 live streams, which you can find at AM 950 Radio on Facebook, as well as Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. Good luck on that. So getting back to my point here, talking to two kids about what exactly happened in Minnetonka and what they perceived and how, like I said, they perceived it as a completely mishandled by the school, and that the school was taking the side of trying to prevent people from protesting racism, which was not a good place to be and stuff. There was criticism of the school board itself and the head of the school board, but as well, once again, this idea that this person said, it's like, well, no, the white kids who come from conservative households, they're saying it a lot more than they ever did before. And the thing which is scary is this person said, I think that this is the feeling of that people, they're fighting with critical race theory. They're saying you can't say anything bad about, you can't say anything that bad happened to Native Americans, Black Americans, Latino Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, but we can say pretty much anything we want to at any point. And that kind of seems like the unspoken thing about what's happening, why this is gearing off, and yeah, it's kind of scary. And you want to know the truth is, I thought about that after this young man brought this up, this point up. I said, wow, that's actually a very insightful thought process on this. Because not only do I think he's right, that I think that the end game for some people is that, no, we are going to reestablish a white uber alles America, that white people can say what they want, do what they want, don't have to learn the history of what actually happened. We can rewrite it, revisit it, change it completely. And that's just that. And that's when you have kids who don't understand any better, this is what you get, is that, you know, they're at home and they're hearing their parents say, well, we're putting the N-word in their place. We're doing the N-word in their place. And they get into school and they say it, and all of a sudden they're getting into trouble. And it brings up the interesting point of why Minnetonka High School is so frantically sweeping this under the rug. Now, it should be mentioned that Minnetonka High School is not the only one that had problems with this last week. New Prague High School has had a mess with this, apparently. There have been three different sporting events where racist chants have come from the New Prague families and fans at their event. Which, when I think about that in conjunction with this kid said, I said, I exactly think this. We told you you can't teach people about what really happened to black people, but now we're in charge. And they say this, and so this is one of those things like, we won, we've gotten critical race theory banned, you can't say anything about race, and as a matter of fact, we now can say anything we want to about you, so yeah, and it makes sense. It makes sense. And the reason why I think what's going on at these schools is desperately trying to be swept under the rug, and I'll specifically talk about Minnetonka. Minnetonka, if you don't know the Minnetonka School District, there's a large chunk of Minnetonka that's actually in the Hopkins School District. Minnetonka School District basically is the western side of Minnetonka and a lot of the wealthier towns on the south side of Lake Minnetonka. So it's very wealthy, fairly conservative in certain places. And what you have in that area is some of the biggest cash cows for the Republican fundraising in the entire state. I mean, these are people that write massive checks. There's a lot of times you will see Republicans come to a fundraiser at someone's house on Lake Minnetonka. A lot of times that's where they're going. They're going to these wealthy, uber wealthy, far right extremists that live on the lake that are extremely wealthy and can buy the influence. And so I think that's what's going on at Minnetonka. I can't say for sure, but this critical race theory stuff, it gets derailed if all of a sudden a bunch of white kids are seen screaming racist things at the top of their lung. Because you can't deny then the problem isn't teaching people about black people and what happened to them and Native Americans and what happened to them. The problem is you've got white people that don't know the basics of common decency and how to treat, and that don't know anything about Christian principles, don't know anything about how to be a decent human being in any way, shape, or form. And we clearly need to help teach these people, you don't say these words. Now, I'm going to carry, there's always that parent that comes out and said, well, if they said it in a rap album, why can't I? Well, because you just can't. Because it's racist. But this is why I think there's such a fight on this, is that considering the fundraising for the GOP comes from Lake Minnetonka area, a lot of it does, comes from the very wealthy people in that area. And considering that you're banning critical race theory is a huge, is that entire second, you know, fork of the Republican policy, that the idea is to basically shut this down and not even have any discussion about what's going on, for the reason being that this is, you know, we can't spend any time talking about this. It's very similar to Amir Locke. And why are the Republicans incredibly hesitant to talk about that? Is because their narrative is the poor Minneapolis police. Somebody help them. And then all of a sudden one of them blasts away an innocent man in an apartment sleeping, for God's sakes, who's legally owning a gun. And then all of a sudden it doesn't become about the poor Minneapolis police. It's, oh, here we go again. Another story where the Minneapolis police crossed a line and wow, they need to be reined in. Well, the same thing goes here. If all of a sudden you get, you know, my guess is going to be, is there's going to be a lot of conversations over the next few weeks until we get out of the school year and in the beginning of the next school year, telling people that, hey, you know, you might feel as if racism is okay, but you can't say anything because we want to ban critical race theory and use this as a weapon in this election cycle. And if we constantly have high schools where at basketball games and football games and hockey games, there are people in the crowds screaming the N-word or making inappropriate gestures to African-American or Native American players, well, that completely negates the entire ability. So I wonder if part of the reason why this story is desperately trying to get hidden is because of the larger implications, is that considering the money power of the Republican base is out, a lot of it comes from that Lake Minnetonka area, is part of this basically trying to bury the story so they can get back to using critical race theory as a weapon to try to basically, you know, hey, white people, ignore the students who are saying the wildly inappropriate things against the minorities. We need to stop the black people from getting out of line. I mean, that's kind of what they need, that they want. It should be noted that, yes, both spurs of the Republican attack this upcoming year are about against black people. Let's just be honest. Let's just have a, you know, keep that out there. Because why? Do they talk about farming policy? Nope. Do they talk about tax policy? Nope. Do they talk about fiscal policy at all? Nope. Health and human services? Not really. They talk about environment? No. What is their entire thing? We've got to stop the black people in Minneapolis, and we got to stop people from having to learn about black people. But yet they still insist, where do you get the idea we're racist? It's a mystery of the ages, isn't it? One quick final note. I want to make sure, and John Oliver last night on Last Week Tonight makes a very important point about how this critical race theory got out. And basically what he's saying is this, is that far-right extremists use far-right media to push the far-right narrative, and now it's everywhere. I bring this up because, once again, I want to challenge DFLers, the DFL leadership, the DFL, any DFL candidate. You guys have got to get much better at messaging. Now, I know you guys sit there and say to yourself, the way for us to win is to go into the belly of the beast. Go onto that radio station that hates my guts and get 5 minutes to where I can put out my issues, and I'll win the day. No, you won't. Nope, nope, nope. Especially when you go on these radio stations, and for 2 hours before you're on, they're ripping you as a clown. You're on for 10 minutes, and they're cordial to you. Not exactly nice, they're cordial. And the second you're off the air, they're ripping on you again. That's not doing anything for you. Your argument is, well, I don't want to speak to the Democrats. I need to go on out there and win over 3 Republicans. You're not going to win them over. For God's sakes, they all voted for Trump a second time. Wake the F up. Will you? The Republicans control the narrative, not by going on progressive radio or progressive media, because it doesn't really freaking exist. They control the narrative because they go on far-right media with far-right mouthpieces, and they drive home a narrative. And by the time the Democrats have even thought about responding, it's already out of control. They understand, they get their school of fish to swim in the right direction, and then they can control them any way they want to. You guys are desperately trying to convince one or two fish to come off the school, and they have no intent on doing that. Yes, I am saying this to a point with a bit of bias, because it is embarrassing sometimes how difficult it is to get some Democrats to come on this station and DFL leaderships to come on the station. A Republican in the very northwestern part of the state could get called by a radio station in the very southwestern part of the state, nowhere near each other, and asked to do an interview, and they say, what time do you want me there? I beg a DFLer to come on this radio station to talk to you, the constituents, the listeners, the people that are going to be the volunteers, the people that are going to give the $25 checks, you. And I don't know. I don't want to seem like I'm just pandering to liberals. Oh, God, I got to go get my caboose handed to me on a far right station. I'm tired of it. You guys suck at messaging on the left, and you could take some lessons from the right, because once again, they don't care about CNN or the New York Times or MSNBC. For the most part, they don't care about PBS. What they care about is getting on their network of far-right stations and driving a narrative, and because they basically talk to their voters and their constituents, and they put out the talking points those people want to hear, they can control the entire narrative. While you guys are sitting there saying, please don't kick me in the groin again to some far-right media outlet that really is only going to throw a pie in your face by the time you get done with your interview. You guys got to get better at messaging. And I have how many years? 12 years I have been doing this show. And 12 years I've been screaming at you guys got to do this better. And 12 years, you guys suck still at this. You guys got to get out there and be far more proactive and far more and talk to your base, because the Republicans control every national discussion point with their base. And you guys take your base for granted way too effing much. Fact. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. There are some DFLers out there that are doing it right. As a matter of fact, my Democrat of the day coming up here in the next hour is one of them, Ann Johnson Stewart, Senate District 44. Oh, she gets a delight. She gets a delightful task to take on Osmek in the very new, very much more progressive district. Mwah! Manna from heaven. We'll talk to her. But I mean, I think the DFL could learn from Ann Johnson Stewart and Aaron Murphy and you know, Lindsey Port. And there are a lot of great DFLers that are there. Ron Latz. I mean, guys that know how to fight and fight hard for DFL principles. There's a lot out there. And I just, you know, God forbid we unleash our best weapons, you know? God forbid you do that. It was a three-day snowmobile ride at Cragen's Resort on Gull Lake involving 11 legislators, the state's foremost snowmobile lobby, new equipment from Polaris Inc., six executives from the Department of Natural Resources, and the agency's top cop. Hailed annually since Tim Pawlenty was governor, the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association Winter Rendezvous gained more attention this year than ever. That's because two senators crashed a pair of factory fresh sleds in a ditch. Yikes. The sad part is that the injuries to John Jasinski, he barely fractured his pelvis. Well, that was because the one snowmobile ended up on top of him. Ugh. He's temporarily unable to walk. Hopefully he does heal. The DNR's five-day silence about the incidents, coupled with early police reports that were shallow and erroneous, led to public cries of special treatment and cover-up. Now that the dust has settled, interviewers and documents shed new light on what happened and why outsiders suspected a cover-up. At 12:45 p.m. on Friday, February 4th, DNR Enforcement Division Director Rodman Smith was navigating a roadside ditch near Motley aboard a brand-new Polaris snowmobile owned by his agency. The ditch was part of an official state trail south of Lake Chamonix, and Smith was not a leader in the group rides VIP organized by Minnesota USA. The Smith's group, one of four that rode from Cragen's to have lunch at Castaway Club on Lake Alexander, was en route back to the resort. Now, I want to make sure I say this. They had driven out to the resort, and they were driving back after eating at the resort at lunch. So after lunch, like I said, I've been on some of these things. Now, I'm not saying the alcohol was involved, but I'm saying I've been on these things and these alcohol is plenty around. I'm just saying that. Now, once again, I'm not saying anyone has taken alcohol, but the circumstances here should demand that you check it. In each group, by the way, there were 8 to 10 riders. Smith slowed down to make a sharp left turn into the woods. He said a turn was unmarked. Behind him were Senators Jasinski and Mark Johnson, a Republican from East Grand Forks. Jasinski failed to make the turn. A ski on his snowmobile hit the rear track of Smith's sled. The impact triggered a chain reaction that left Jasinski on the ground with a broken pelvis. On top of him, according to Smith's report, was the 500-pound snowmobile operated by Johnson. In an interview last week, you can say, well, one of the blades hit the back of the car. You rear-ended someone. That's another thing they keep trying to. It wasn't a rear-ending. It's just a blade. No, you rear-ended them. Your vehicle hit the other vehicle. There was a rear-ending that happened here. Um, So he failed to make the turn. A ski on his snowmobile hit the rear track of Smith's sled. So he rear-ended Smith, which, by the way, it does sound like that's kind of been new. It was always under the impression that Smith rear-ended Jasinski. In an interview last week, Marison County Sheriff Sean Lawson said Smith called him right away to say that he was directly involved in the crash and wanted a deputy sheriff to cover the accident. Four DNR conservation officers assisted the group, Ryan. They went to the scene of the crash, but Smith told Orison it would be a conflict of interest for DNR to investigate it. In the Minneapolis Senate, Jasinski is an assistant majority leader. This year, he's pushing pro-law enforcement bill to entice more people to become law enforcement. In October, Jasinski was arrested in Rice County, and he publicly apologized for drunken driving. So, you have Jasinski having had a drunken driving conviction, having had lunch on one of these snowmobile things, which usually are soaked in liquor. Not saying he was, I'm just saying the snowmobile rides are. And he rear-ended the vehicle in front of him. He told reporters after a snowmobile accident that he hadn't been drinking alcohol the day of the accident. Senator Kerry Rood of Breezy Point vouched for Jasinski in an interview with the Star Tribune, saying she sat near his table at Castaway and there was no drinking, she said. Smith, too, said he didn't observe anyone drinking during lunch. The accident scene, neither Jasinski or Johnson showed signs of impairment. The chief said without indicators it would have been illegal for them to test them. Okay. So you're telling me that a person who has been convicted of drinking and driving after a lunch rear-ends another vehicle and crashes, and God forbid, I mean, he's injured. That's reality. He's injured. You're telling me you didn't sit back and say, maybe we should have DWI'd this guy. Maybe we should have tested him. Because I got to tell you the truth, for most people, especially most black people, I don't think everyone in the car saying, well, he hasn't been drinking, officer, would be enough for them to say, well, then there's no need for me to test anyone. I don't think you were, I mean, by the way, he wasn't showing signs of being inebriated. He had a snowmobile on top of him. I think that there clearly was some VIP treatment here, and that is kind of undeniable. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday, President's Day. Thank you very much for being with us today. Our Democrat of the day is coming to us currently from Senate District 44. She is going to be fighting in Senate District 45, which is going to possibly be one of the most delightful things to happen this coming November. I'll get to that in a second. Senator Ann Johnson Stewart is kind enough to join us today to talk about how things are going. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you, and thanks for inviting me. Do I get a crown or something for being Democrat of the day?
Well, we could. I mean, they'd be like Burger King crowns, but, you know, it's not exactly an official Regal title, but for sure you'll
That's
own today.
Okay. After this weekend, I'll take anything I can get.
No problem. Senator, let's go with that. Let's start off with the fact that the redistricting comes out, and sometimes it can be a little bad, sometimes it can be a little good, sometimes it can be fascinating and interesting. Your new district, 45, is going to be Senate District 45. That's the one you're going to be running for coming up here in November. It's very interesting, right? Because obviously it's changed dramatically. There's a lot of different changes there. But Dave Osmek, who is not exactly one of the most moderate Republicans I've ever seen, saw his district get dismantled, and he is now folded into you. I don't think there's been an official announcement on whether or not he'll run for this seat, but the seat itself, as you look at just, you know, trends in voting, as long as people show up and vote, does lean DFL. It's going to be a much harder seat for him to claim, especially when we have a pretty top-notch senator already there waiting to basically take another term. Hopefully that might be the case. So your thoughts on the change to 45?
Well, it did get, I mean, it basically, okay, so 33 and 44 were added together. 44, which is what I got elected in, went from a north-south district to an east-west district. And I happened to be looking out my window at the district that I used to represent. And then, of course, 33 shrunk much to the east. So I think it's a winnable district. I feel actually really excited about running against Senator Osmek. He and I are pretty much polar opposites, so the voters will have a clear choice. And, you know, I'm just ready to get out there and talk to new people. I still have a lot of people from my old district, so we still have quite a bit of Minnetonka.
Yeah, Minnetonka, so. Basically, I mean, if I get, and I'm going to do just the most layman terms here. It's 169, looks like, west, north of Hopkins, so and that's Minnetonka. You get Wayzata, Woodland. Yep. You get a good chunk of Long Lake, so the north side of Lake Minnetonka. It runs all the way out to St. Bonnie's, so basically the southern part of Hennepin County all the way to St. Bonnie's, correct?
Yep, and the way I see it is it's anything that touches Lake Minnetonka plus St. Bonifacius.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't been a tendency of running more. I mean, I remember, I've been doing the show for 12 years, and I remember when we first started doing the show, that was a more solid Republican, but now it's becoming, there are more DFLers moving out into this area. Once again, not a slam dunk. Nothing is for granted. You got to work every single race. But that is a district where the DFL has been showing stronger and stronger and stronger every election cycle.
Mm-hmm. And the same with my district, too. So, my current district. So Plymouth and Minnetonka 44 were represented by Paul Anderson, and I chose to run, and we ended up flipping this district. I think both because I was a good candidate, but also because this part of the metro area is becoming more DFL. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even out as far west to Excelsior, I mean, there's a lot of small towns that behave as small towns, but they also are part of the metro area. And I think I can get their vote. So I think it's more of a blue district than you would expect.
I hope so. Have you heard from Dave Osmek on, is he planning on running again?
No, I have not heard from Senator Osmek. I saw him today on the floor. Of course, he was, you know, way up high at the president's chair. But no, I have not heard from him. Mm-hmm. And I'm not expecting him to retire. I think he's up for, for this, and I would be very surprised actually if he decided to retire.
Okay, this is me saying this. This is not you saying this. This is me saying this. The comedy gold of Dave Osmek trying to come out. It's like, hey guys, I'm really a moderate. Oh my God. Oh God, is that going to be hilarious? I cannot wait. Manna from heaven. And by the way, I was looking at his website earlier today. He did a fundraiser for his kickoff last year in Chanhassen, which isn't even part of his district anymore. So, yeah, that was a good investment. That was a great investment.
Well, let's talk about investment. I mean, I invested a lot of energy into Plymouth. I love the people of Plymouth.
Yes.
You know, we get the hand we're dealt. And I like to think that I made a lot of friends in Plymouth, and they're going to be for me, helping me campaign even in 45. Mm-hmm. So it's good to make friends regardless of where they live.
Oh, I'm going to try to get as many people as I can out to 45 for this district race. Oh, trust me, this one's on my radar.
Oh.
And by the way, I should mention, and what the senator's mentioning here is now Plymouth now is Senate District 42. That's going to be the new 42, mm-hmm. which is pretty much all Plymouth, which once again shows you how much great growth they've had there and the right kind of growth. Right. I was just up in Plymouth this weekend. Just they're doing it right there. And so, you know, bless them. I'm glad they're growing. And this is a sign that they're being very successful.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, they're big enough. They, before redistricting, they had three different senators representing them. And now I think they're down to whoever gets elected in November.
Yeah, pretty much.
It makes sense. You know, it makes sense. It's a big area with lots of people. And I'll be helping whoever runs in 42 and whoever comes out of the convention. I'll be helping them to win up there, too.
Let's run through your committee assignments that you're currently on: capital investment, jobs and economic growth, and transportation, finance, and policy. Let's start with last year. Give me one or two things that you were happy that got through last year that you were helping with.
Well, being in the minority, it was a challenge. I think the only thing that really got through that I was the primary author on was the 494 Corridor Commission had a bill that funded some outreach for businesses throughout the state or throughout anywhere, it doesn't matter, to help transition into remote work. And it was a small bill, but I felt really good. They had tried to get a hearing in the years before and were never able to even get a hearing. So I was glad that I was able to help the 494 Corridor Commission. You know, as a civil engineer, I have data that shows we can't build our way out of congestion. So one of the things I'm advocating for is innovative ideas, whether they be transit, BRT, the Corridor Commission's efforts for remote work, just getting people to either stay at home and be as productive or figure out new ways to get to work. So I was proud of that because I think it offers a new model, and it's something that the whole state can use. On the bonding committee, we haven't voted yet, but I was proud to be on the bonding committee because I just loved all the tours. I loved talking to engineers. A lot of the ones we met had been my students at the university. So, you know, we get back on the bus, and I, in a very non, like, know-it-all way, so I don't want you to roll your eyes, but, you know, kind of explain the nuances of why, you know, a certain sewage treatment system wasn't working, or why, how much a box culvert costs, or, you know, whatever the case was. I really enjoyed my time on the bonding committee, and of course, we're not done yet with that bill.
And it's one of those things, by the way, what you just heard is this is why we need you there, is because this is wonkish kind of stuff that a lot of people, you know, when people think about politics, they want to do, oh, there's this one issue, I want to do it. You need people that are going to go in there and basically immerse themselves in kind of the sausage making, as they say. You know, it's the boring stuff. I was on planning and zoning in Hopkins for a while. And, you know, you kind of get in there and you can see the appeal of it, but it's not for a lot of people. You want people that are good at that, and you are fantastic at that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's the teacher in me, but I also, I really love sewage and water and transportation and construction. It's a perfect fit for me. So that's one reason I'm going to fight so hard to get reelected is I love this job. I love the content. I love the people, even on both sides. You know, my colleagues in the bonding committee, we've spent a lot of time together, and I've really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have over $7 billion coming in infrastructure money.
Yeah.
I have been meeting with my peers and my colleagues just to figure out how to spend this money, how to prioritize it, how to be smart about it. Like, that's a lot of money. We need a few experts on the floor talking about that and how we're going to best use all that money. It's not just like free money coming in from Washington. There's a lot of strings attached to it. So I really loved it, and I hope I get another 4 years there.
You brought up something with transportation I want to kind of, you know, touch on with you, because this is what has been a traditional fight. Well, the fight has been the last 20 years, road construction versus mass transportation. And, you know, namely because the Republicans turned it that way. They didn't want to look at a unified plan for the entire state. They wanted to them and us it, and they did. And, you know, we have to have a plan because all transportation is subsidized, whether it's a roadway, a bike path, a light rail line, whatever. Everything is subsidized. But you brought up a very interesting point, is that how are things going to change now that we've had 2 years of pandemic? We have a lot of businesses that are like, okay, why am I renting space? Maybe I should just have my office, my people work from their home if they want to, you know, cut down on office space, change things up. I mean, as this dynamic changes, what are you doing to try to keep on top of that? Because it really is much more fluid than it's ever been in transportation in a long time.
I know. We saw average daily traffic or traffic count numbers just plummet in the first part of the pandemic. And now slowly, you know, haven't you noticed that yourself? All of a sudden you're in traffic and you're like, what is this all about? I thought we were done with traffic. Like, what? I don't want to have traffic anymore. But we are seeing numbers back up to approaching what they were pre-pandemic, because people are both going back to work, but they're also going back to life. You know, they're going back to the Vikings games, and they're going back to the grocery store and to out drinking at night or whatever they're doing, right? So we are seeing numbers come back. And in truth, I think a lot of our roads currently, we know where the tight spots are. I think Highway 35W south of downtown is one of the most congested. Oh, no, it's 94 between the two downtowns is one of the most congested pieces of roadway in the nation. And so, you know, we had a little reprieve. I think engineers learned a lot about that. And I teach at the University of Minnesota, so I know there were some studies happening around traffic and congestion and rides to work and all that stuff. We've learned from that, but now we're seeing things come back. I think the truth is this. People want to work from home. And now we're going to see this conflict or battle. I don't want it to sound like that. This conversation between employers and employees saying, well, how much are we talking about here? Am I going to be able to work from home 100% of the time or 50% of the time? And the challenge is we don't know. We can't say, okay, if you live in this zip code, you have to work Monday and Friday. And if you live in this zip code, you work Tuesday, Thursday. We could have everybody who decides to work on Monday, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can't really control the capacity and the congestion. But I think that's going to be really interesting in the near future. We're always mm-hmm. going to need transit. And I think actually, as we move forward, we're going to need more transit because there's just data out there that the younger you are, the less likely you are to own a car. And people want transit. It's kind of almost a point of honor in terms of your metropolitan area. Can you take transit somewhere? And so I think we're going to see the demand for transit increase. Regardless of the pandemic, but combined with the pandemic, I think that's really going to be a significant change. There was an article in the paper yesterday about the Gold Line up through Eastern Metro mm-hmm. and how they're seeing development out in Maplewood that they've never seen before. People don't want to be encumbered by a car anymore. They want to be able to live and work and travel in a way that's not expensive, in a way that offers them the flexibility that we've seen out on the East Coast for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if I answered your question. I just kept talking. Asked me about roads, asked me about traffic and civil engineering, I just kind of get a little bit droney.
Well, I was a traffic reporter forever. You didn't drone at all. My goodness. But much to the Republicans' chagrin, that's the thing, is that they don't want to do that. They don't want to see this metro area growing, especially as, frankly, the voters reject Republican policies in the Twin Cities metro area. That's a sacrificial lamb for them. And you have to have decent, you can't have a working city without a functioning transportation system. And that is, I think, one of the things that's greatly lost on modern Republicans today. They don't want to look, it's like you're in their district and they need a road rebuilt. Then there's not enough money in the world that can't be spent on it. But when you talk about, well, I got to get people to work in the metro area, they're like, well, that's the Twin Cities. We shouldn't bother with that. You can't have that mentality because all business needs to have an effective way of working on this. So I think that that's a key. So one thing I wanted to ask you about in regards to this upcoming session, obviously you're going to say goodbye to Senate District 44. Is there something that you want to, in regards to, champion for the district or just champion overall for the state? What is one thing you really want to focus on in this upcoming session?
Well, the bonding, the Capital Investment Committee offers me a great opportunity to really advocate for those projects that I think are important.
Yes.
They're all important. But certainly when you see, we traveled around the state, and when you hear from a small community that has unsafe drinking water because their pipes are reacting with the water, much like what we saw in Flint, Michigan, and they can't, they can't drink the water. They don't have enough people to really provide the tax base to pay for the upgrades, and they have really not a lot of options other than to ask the state to help them. When I see projects like that, that's important, and I'm not saying it's necessarily more worthy of being funded than something like a community development program in somewhere else. But, to really answer the prayers of people who have no other way to provide basic infrastructure, I think that's really important. And I look forward to having input on the bonding committee.
Mm-hmm.
In Plymouth, we have County Road 47, which is a really unsafe, literally a wagon road, meaning that it was created back over 100 years ago. That's been pretty much the same alignment ever since, and we just paved it and kept it two lanes, which now has a school on it. It has thousands of people using it every day, and it's just unsafe. If I can advocate for County Road 47 getting funded, that'll be a big accomplishment for me because I, my friends and neighbors and grandchildren are on that road. So knowing that I had a part in getting that project successfully built would be important. But I think this year it's going to be an interesting session because we have an election year. We have a couple gubernatorial candidates in the room. We have a lot of focus on crime and on policing, which is a touchy issue. I think it's going to be an interesting session to watch. We have a bajillion dollars coming in from the feds. We need to spend that judiciously. We have frontline workers we have to take care of. I just hope to keep my glasses on straight and be looking ahead and hope that we can accomplish something together, because it's also pretty polarized.
Yeah, it's just a smidge. There's an agenda on the right. Let's put it this way. I'm looking at County Route 47, though, by the way, which is kind of south of Bass Lake Road, and it kind of runs east-west there. You're right. I was out there over the holidays. There was one of the houses that was listed as one of the great holiday lights. I was out there, and I was cutting on 47 to the next house, and my gosh, that road's a mess.
I know.
Oh.
I know.
Yes.
It's very dangerous. And, you know, it's not just the people that live in Plymouth that use it. I mean, Center Osmek's district is to the west. Center Limmer is just to the northwest. A lot of people use that as an arterial road because they don't want to get on 694. And when engineers design a road, we look at things like sight distance. So when the road curves, either, you know, like in plan view or map view, or when you go up and down a road, or up and down a curve, all those things impact how safe it is for the driver to see if far enough to stop. And we have some safety improvements that definitely need to be made on that road related to sight distance. And then we got all kinds of kids and bikes and walkers and strollers in the road because there's no trail. So the purpose of that road has also changed. Like I said, it used to be a wagon road, like a wagon trail. And now it's a commuter, you know, it's like a family kid walk to school road. So it's really important that we upgrade it. And I'll be proud if we can get that project included on the bonding bill.
And this is kind of, like I said, this is the kind of leadership. I mean, that's just common sense stuff. And as this city grows, this is, and trust me, I'm looking at your new Senate District 45. There's a few roads in that one that are going to need some immediate upgrades as well. So this is the kind of leadership. This is the kind of leadership you want in 44 for the rest of this year, 45 in the year to come. Now, if I may, Senator, this is the point where I say to everyone out there, hey, help your local Democrat, by all means. Help your local senator, House rep, by all means. This is a district the Republicans are desperately going to want to win. If Osmek runs, they are going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at them. This is not a far district. This is right on the west side. If you can volunteer and door knock or make a donation, help out Ann Johnson Stewart win the new Senate District 45 in November, please do. Now, Senator, what's the website if they want to find your campaign stuff here?
It's Ann, A-N-N, AnnJohnsonStewart.com. And we're just updating it with a new round of issue statements. You can contribute there. You can volunteer. I will probably need some help up till the convention because I got districted into this area. So I'm going to need some help calling delegates and knocking doors. I would love any help. I have a couple great campaign managers. Last time around, I raised over $200,000. And so I'm ready to raise the money it's going to take to flip this district. But you know what? I don't want to sound Pollyanna-ish or naive, but I did it once before, and I feel really strongly I can do it again. I'm positive. People trust engineers. I'm going to go out there and talk to people at the doors, and if anybody wants to help me, I'd be so grateful.
Democrats, listen to me. A vote for Ann Johnson Stewart is a vote against Dave Osmek. Ta-da! Ta-da! Okay, it's that simple. And trust me, that might be that might make election night kind of fun. Anywho, that's just me. That's just me, Senator. I'll leave you out of that. So, Senator Ann Johnson Stewart, once again, Senate District 44 right now, 45 come November. Senator, thank you very much. Appreciate the time today. We'll link to everything later on so people can find you and volunteer, okay?
Oh, how kind of you to be so thoughtful to do that and also to have me on today. I really enjoyed my time with you. Thank you.
Senator, it's my absolute privilege. Thank you. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much, Senator Ann Johnson Stewart, Democrat of the day today. 952-946-6205. And boy, oh, would I like to kiss Dave Osmond goodbye. The orc. We got to say goodbye to the orc, man. I got to imagine he has probably been swearing like a sailor. I'm just going to speculate. Swearing like a sailor ever since he saw his new district, because his district became, that's one of, someone, I don't think he's the worst. Chamberlain might actually be the worst as far as a Republican district that's gone more Democrat, but that one's not a, yeah, that one's not a good one here. So Patrick, CBS News put out, it is President's Day. We should take a quick moment to talk about the, you know, weird royalty we have in this country. They put out the ranking of the best presidents and to worst for this year. George Washington, number one. I go back and forth on Lincoln and Washington. Now, once again, not excusing any of the bad behavior they did there. The one thing about Washington I do appreciate is he stepped away. He stopped. You know, we could have become, he was so beloved at that time in the country by the white Europeans that he could have stayed and made it a lifetime job, and probably no one would have gotten in his way. And he left after two terms. So to a point, that I think is one of the most important things, because that's the first thing you have to establish, is that there is an end to your term, Donald Trump. Yeah, so you just got to establish that. Washington, FDR, number two. He had some issues too, but he also was, you know, basically saved the country through progressive policies. Lincoln comes in at three, for Native Americans, one of the worst, but you know, it's on these lists, they don't have a tendency of looking at the whole picture per se. Teddy Roosevelt, number four. Roosevelt would have been a strong D now. He'd be a Democrat big time, and not just kind of, not like, oh, well, I guess my party left now. He would be like an Al Gore Democrat. Jefferson, well, once again, some ugly there. The best thing Jefferson did was undo everything Adams did. let's be honest about it. Dwight D. Eisenhower installed the highway system, which led to racism and the destruction of African-American neighborhoods throughout the country. James Madison, a little high for Madison. Monroe, eight. Okay, fine. Get these guys in. Still lots of issues with these guys. Harry Truman, there's that whole nuclear bomb thing. I mean, I go back and forth on that. As a guy who was in the military, I do understand. The invasion of Japan by the U.S. Armed Forces would have been catastrophic casualties. But does a nuclear bomb really erase that? I don't know. Kennedy, where's my mistresses? Yeah, that is number 10. Yeah, you know, so I will say this, James K. Polk, the more I've read about Polk, one-termer, once again, punted on the whole slavery issue. He shouldn't have done that. That's definitely a negative for his legacy. But in 4 years, that dude, Mexican-American War, established the boundaries of the country. Yeah, he did a lot of things in 4 years. They have, let's see here, Obama comes in at 17 on this list. On the C-SPAN list, he comes in much higher. And as a matter of fact, they have, Andrew Jackson comes in at 19 on this list. On a lot of lists, Jackson is now way down at the bottom. I mean, he's kind of dropping left and right. As we go through the list here, it's not a big surprise that some presidents, you know, they don't do as well. Some presidents do better. As we go to the bottom here, the race to the bottom, number 33, George W. Bush, not a good president. Number 34, Chester A. Arthur. Boy, the sideburns on that dude, sexy. Oh my God. But that's pretty much the only thing he did. He was a Tammany Hall guy, wasn't he? Yeah, he was Tammany Hall. He took over for Garfield after Garfield was assassinated, and he just was corrupt and he wasn't good. Benjamin Harrison is 35. Wasn't very good. You know, if your first thing is, we had a president named Benjamin Harrison. Yes. Tells you a lot there. Hoover, 36. John Tyler, 37. About the only thing Tyler did was establish that the vice president takes over after there's assassination. Number 38, Millard Fillmore. Oh, nothing funnier than his name. Number 9 is the guy that died 6 weeks into his term, William Henry Harrison. So I want to repeat this. Everyone that ranks after William Henry Harrison was worse than the guy that died 6 weeks into his term. Okay. That tells you everything you need to know about the stellar list that's about to come forward here. Franklin Pierce, number 40, god awful. Warren G. Harding, could be the second most corrupt president of all time. He's at 41. 42 is Donald Trump. And at the bottom of our countdown, James Buchanan. This was the guy that basically thought the Dred Scott case would solve the slavery issue. Wow. And then basically as people say, well, the states seceded because of Lincoln. No, Lincoln wasn't even in office when half the states seceded. They seceded while Buchanan was in office, and Buchanan did nothing to try to stop it. So, yeah, he was pretty pathetic. But I'd make an argument that after we get done with all the lawsuits, Donnie T might be taking the bottom spot. Because this is what happens, you idiot Republicans, when you go for, I don't know what the hell you were going for, but you sure weren't going for substance. That's, you're going for a pile of refuge in the middle of the floor. That's what you were going for. That liked Diet Coke. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hey, he's your guy. He's your, and you want another term with him. Yeah. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Now they're saying snow after 10. Maybe. I don't know. Let's see here. What are they saying now? Yeah, now they're saying 5 inches total is what we're going to get in the next 2 days here in the metro area, which is down dramatically from the 11 inches they were talking earlier. So just keep an eye. It's going to snow tomorrow. Tomorrow we are going to get snow, but not that much. A few people pointing out, apparently Kelly Morrison, the House rep, is over in that area. She's also going to run for the Senate District 45 seat against Sue, Senator Ann Johnson Stewart. Here's the deal. I don't have any problem having her on. There. This is not about one or the other. As a matter of fact, I would love Dave Osmek to come on this show. Oh, sweet Jesus. Oh, God. Oh, God. I'd love Senator Dave Osmek, who's blocked me, by the way, on Twitter. I would love him to come on this show as the Republican of the day. Oh, God. So much pleasure. Seriously, dude, come on. You want to do Republican of the Day? You can try out your new song and dance routine about I'm really a moderate. Can't wait to ask you about who exactly stripped the language out of the bill preventing people from selling the internet history of children. Who did that? I'd love to talk to you about that. So come on by. Come on. Republican of the day. I'll do Republican of the day in a heartbeat. My show, my questions, and I will not allow you to go just on some rant. We have Patrick, Brett, when they're working here, they can pot you down. And we will if you just go on a belligerent rant and not ask my questions. End scene. As far as DFL seats, if there's a challenger and I interview someone from the race, I'll interview the other people from the race. That's the case. And, you know, it's up to you. It's like when we had Isaacson and John Marty on. They're both running in that district. We had both of them on. In case you didn't hear, we had both of them on back-to-back last week. And my mentality is this. Educate yourself. Find out the candidate you like. Help that candidate. Great. But let's make sure a DFLer wins that seat. All right? And I do not regret interviewing Senator Ann Johnson Stewart. And I will not regret if Kelly Morrison wants to become Democrat of the day. I had her on before as when the House race. She's more than welcome to come back. It's not about playing favorites. About making sure the DFL wins in 2022. Still looking for your AM 950 Wordle entries. You can do that by going to either the Facebook stream for AM 950 or for Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. Either one, and you can enter in your word. It can be any word, any length of word. It has to have the letters W, R, and H in order in that word. W as in water, R as in Romeo, H as in hotel. They have to be in order in the word. Good luck on that. You can put it in the comment section on the live streams, or you can call Patrick, who's lonely. He'd love to chat with you. 952. Sorry, man. That's on me. That's my bad. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Get your Wordle word in, please, on that. That would be fantastic. I wanted to, well, if I may mention, Olympics are now over. I can't tell you how proud I am of Jesse Diggins. One of the things with Winter Olympics, one of the things that happens is the 30K race, it's a mass start race. It's basically the equivalent of the marathon in the Summer Olympics. I mean, it's brutal. 30K on skis as fast as you can go. Ugh, it's brutal. The Norwegian, great, and this is her fourth gold medal? Wow. Therese Johaug. It's a Norwegian, so Johaug. Johaug. Yee. Therese. She did fantastic. She got her third gold medal of the Beijing Olympics. Jesse Diggins took silver for the best result by an American in an individual cross-country skiing event since 1976. Fierce winds, brutal temperatures. She went out to an early lead in the 30-kilometer mass start and went on to win 1 hour, 24 minutes. God, that's fast. 1 hour and 24 minutes she won that thing in, let's see, where is it? 54 seconds. Johaug won also in the skiathlon, the first gold medal of the Olympics, and the 20-kilometer classic race. Diggins, also skiing alone for much of the race, kept a steady pace behind the Norwegian as gusts whipped across the tracks and battered the skiers, many with tape on their faces to protect from the cold. She dropped to the ground after crossing the line 1:43:30 behind her. So it's 1 minute and 43 seconds. So she did that, and God, 1 hour, 26 minutes, and 40 seconds? Dear Lord. That's fast. Every last drop of energy went into that race, Diggins said. The last two laps, my legs were cramping. I had amazing cheering out there, and I thought, I can't give it up. I have to put everything I had in the snow. I was so proud of her. So proud of her to see that. And that's the best part about the Olympics, is to see the people that are trying. You don't have to win the gold. You don't. That is this far right, you know, win at all costs, you know, sweep the leg, Johnny, kind of mentality, which has ruined this country at times. The reality is, I don't mind. Like Shaun White, he didn't win a medal, but the dude was trying every run he did. And frankly, and I've said this, and I've said this a few times over the last few weeks with the Winter Olympics, I just cannot stand some of these X-game athletes that were out there who clearly, once they realized they probably couldn't win, didn't care or were more concerned about their product sponsors than they were about representing the United States. Stay your butts at home. Let someone that wants to represent the United States come on out. Just tired of that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we didn't do that well in the medal count this time around is because, well, it is the Winter Games. We generally don't do as well as we do in the summer. But it was because the fact that you had such a... You know, just had such an absolute kind of a joke performance by some of these extreme game athletes. Not all of them by any means. There are plenty that were out there trying really hard. The two guys that won silver and bronze on the slopes on their skis, holy, on the half pipe on their skis. What are you doing, man? That's insane. And they won silver and bronze. They were fantastic. There are people out there that are trying. And you know what? I'll be so dang proud of your bronze medal far more than when it'd be about someone that was only there because the Mountain Dew Tour was not going and doing anything during this week. So I guess I show up and buy a shine and I'll just do that. Oh my gosh, they did that. Oh, I'm not going to beat that. So I guess I'm going to ski down the slope and not really care. I'm going to go home. Yeah, I'm tired of that. I am tired of that. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what. Let's take this break a little bit early, about 10 more minutes to get your AM 950 Wordle answers in. When we come back, one final story and a reminder of safety protocols when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jesse Dickens, I am going to, I promise this, maybe you, for the members page. On the members page, we're going to post the Jesse Dickens interview we did back 2 years ago when she was getting ready to go on her book tour and then COVID shut everything down. It was just amazing. She's a hero. She's one of my heroes, that's for sure. And so dang proud of her. It's just fantastic, Jesse. You take some time. Take as much time as you need. You deserve the time to be able to relax. 952-946-6205. Coming up here, we'll get the AM 950 Wordle winner in just a moment. But Margie Morgan was recently scammed out of $2,000 in a scheme involving Zelle Digital Payments and a woman who posed as a representative from Wells Fargo. Morgan, a food entrepreneur in Edina, fell victim to the scam because it was a new form of phishing, the practice of sending fraudulent communications that look real. It began as a text message to Morgan's phone that appeared to be from Wells Fargo, but ultimately wasn't. I'm embarrassed by myself because I thought it was smarter than this, she said. The text asked Morgan if she had authorized money transfers from her account. Morgan hit no, immediately received a call from a woman who portrayed herself as a Wells Fargo representative. Morgan said she didn't think much about it because she received legitimate phone calls from the bank and American Express in the past asking about fraudulent activity. The woman told Morgan that to recover the unauthorized transactions, Morgan would need to make reverse transfers to herself via Zelle. She followed the woman's directions, which involved using a PIN the scammer gave her, but the money flowed out of her account, not into it. Morgan, 57, learned later from the actual Wells Fargo representative that she'd been duped out of $3,000. Wells Fargo was able to recover $1,000 of that, but the $2,000 was gone. This type of crime, once again, Republicans refuse to talk about because it's not black man Minneapolis, black man Minneapolis. But this is far more widespread. And Margie, I'm going to be honest with you. Don't beat yourself up. You're right. I've gotten those calls too. I remember when we were out, I went out to Washington, D.C. a few years ago. And I was there and I got a call from the Discover Card. And they said, oh, by the way, we just was wondering, are you authorizing purchases in Washington, D.C.? I said, yes, we are. I said, good. Just if you, and they didn't ask me anything else. They just said, we just want to verify that's you. Okay, fine. And just in the future, if you could let us know if you're going on vacation. And I was like, oh, that's very nice of you. I appreciate that. They didn't ask me to transfer money. They didn't ask for me to enter PIN numbers. They didn't ask me for account numbers. They didn't ask me for any of that. They just said, are you the person, are you using your card in Washington, D.C.? And I said, yes, I am. So there's that. The thing that they do here is they try to take advantage of that. Now, once again, and we have talked about this, I think what happened to you, Margie, is far more, I think, understandable than when they say, well, you need to pay back your account. And the best way to do that is with Buffalo Wild Wings gift cards. And you're like, what? You fell for that? If I had a bank representative or a credit card company representative say, you know, we're going to fix this problem with a Home Depot credit card. Really? No, that doesn't seem to make any sense. Not in any sense at all. But this stuff does happen. And listen to what happens. She gets this text from Wells Fargo, it says it's from Wells Fargo. She hits no, and they immediately go, oh, here's someone who's looking. Get back. Oh, let's reel them on in here. You have to do this. You have to save your account. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the advice that you need to do. Because this is in any banking regulatory customer will say this. Hang up. Go to Wells Fargo's webpage, right? Find their customer service number and call it. If it was really a Wells Fargo customer service representative or any bank or credit union or credit card company, if it was any of these financial institutes' actual real customer service representatives, you'll just be able to say, well, I didn't know if it was legit or not, so I hung up and I decided to call you directly. I pretty much almost guarantee all the time they're going to say no. No, it wasn't us. You know, we didn't call you. And you see, I've had friends who said, well, you don't want to tell you what, I'm going to call you back. I'm going to call back to Wells Fargo customer service here in a few minutes because I got to go. And they're like, you better not hang up now. You'd better do what I say right now. And if they say that, that's anyone would say if it was actually the customer service representative from Wells Fargo or from any bank or any credit card company or any financial institution, they would say, oh, sure, I'm sorry you're in a bad point. I'll tell you what, why don't you call back? Here's a customer service number. Call us back right here. Now, what I'm saying to you is don't follow that advice. Hang up the phone. Hang it up. Go over, find on a website, what's the phone number to call if I have questions about customer service at my financial institution? On the back of your credit card, all of them are listed there. You know, if you go to, you know, whatever the bank you want to go with, Huntington, U.S., Wells Fargo, whatever the case may be, U.S. Bank, you can go there and you can just type in their web address and they'll say customer service and they'll give you the phone number. Call that. That removes any question on whether or not it's legit. And if they try to call you back again, they say, well, you know, you need to fix this. And they say, I just talked to the Wells Fargo customer representative. They say, you're wrong. If they say, well, no, they were wrong because this is really a problem, you hang up on them again. If you really have the question, because trust me, these scammers love, once they get you on the phone, they can't lose you because if they lose you, they know the gig is up. So they'll say anything to get you from hanging up. So you just hang up and say, I'll just call you back on the customer service number. They don't want you to do that for a reason. If they ever ask you for a number to your account, the first thing out of your mouth is, don't you already have all those? I mean, you're the bank. I don't think you have mystery accounts that they're not going to let you know what the number is. Oh, it could be a mystery. No, I'm pretty sure the bank has those numbers. So if they need an account number, that's not the bank. That's not your credit card company. There's some of the skim phishing. And something I will reiterate here. No, you do not fix problems with your banking account or your credit card account or your credit union account with Cheesecake Factory gift cards. You do not do that. So if they're saying you need to get some gift cards and send it to us and send us the numbers, that's a scam. All right. So like I said, hang up the phone and call the actual customer service line associated with the actual institution, not the number they give you. Don't ever call a number back that they give you. Just go on yourself, go pull up the website and call the customer service number on the official website. Ta-da! There you go. Wordle time! Let's get some Wordle time. Leanne Rosh Mahoney, congratulations. You are our winner today. Worthy. She put that word in via the AM950 live stream. Leanne, congratulations. You've won yourself an AM950 calendar. Yay. Still good for at least 10 months. Depends on how the Postal Service does the rest of the month. Your chance to win one is tomorrow. Good luck with that. I'll get another three letters for you. We'll do another AM950 Wordle on your Tuesday. Plus another Democrat of the Day. And Brett's going to be back. And we'll have tons of stuff to get to tomorrow. Native Roots Radio. I am awake. That is coming up next. Have a great night. We are back tomorrow at 4. Until then, see ya.